Hey everyone, welcome to the New Era Rewatch podcast. This will be on Patreon. If you don't know who I am, I'm Will. I was on the podcast long before Alexa and Phil started doing their thing. And with Alexa leaving, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be doing a few more podcasts with Phil. I did not watch the New Era seasons all that closely. When I was podcasting, when I was a super fan, I would watch super closely and then I would, you know, go online, see what social media was saying. I would read exit press. I would listen to podcasts. I would participate in podcasts. I would do all the preseason stuff, all the casting videos, and I'd be super into it. That was not the case with any of the New Era seasons. But now that I am going to be podcasting more, I want to be well-versed in the New Era and understand, you know, all the intricacies, nuances, be able to call out votes, kind of, you know, Phil always has such a Rolodex of information. I would be way far behind if I did not watch these seasons again and pay close attention to them. So that's what this Patreon podcast is going to be. It won't be an episode-by-episode recap. Phil and Alexa have already done that, so if you're looking to do a rewatch and you want to listen to those podcasts that are episode recaps, those are on YouTube or on the podcast feed. What this is more of, it's kind of looking at the big picture of the New Era. What's different about the New Era? What defines the New Era? We'll look at what's working, what's not working, what do we like, what can we change, what seems like a big influence but maybe hasn't influenced the game at all. I'm going to start with one of those, actually. So these will be about 15 to 30 minute podcasts on Patreon. I don't really know how many I'll do per season. I'm thinking about every 3 to 4 episodes, but that's just a rough number. I'm not going to stick to a hard episode count. You know, if 5 or 6 episodes go by and there's not a lot to talk about, nothing new really happens, then I could just group those 6 episodes together and do the mini podcasts. But some episodes might be really groundbreaking, like the season 41 premiere, for instance. That introduces so many new things, and that will probably be one episode on its own. Again, I don't know. I'm going to rewatch these and kind of group them together as we move through the seasons, as we move through the new era. So we'll figure it out as we go. This episode, the one you're currently listening to, is kind of, I'm doing this recording before I start the rewatch. It's a way to get my baseline readings and thoughts on the new era kind of as a more casual viewer before I go deeper into them. So I made a list of the major changes and additions that the new era has brought forth. Some are objective, like 26 Days or The Shot in the Dark. Some are subjective, like the editing or casting. So I'm gonna go through these major changes and discuss kind of their influence on the new era. Is that a defining point of the new era? Maybe get into some negatives, positives, what we like, what we don't like, all that. So let's just get into it. I think the biggest objective change, where you look at it and it's huge, 26 days instead of 39 days. So what is that, 13 days shorter, almost 2 weeks? So we're told that 26 days makes the game faster pace. Also, because it's only 26 days, they get no rice. So it's faster, it's harder, all that. We keep being told that it is faster, it is harder. But I kind of bump on this a little bit, because how much does it really affect the outcome on an episode-to-episode basis? I really don't think it's all that much. It probably has a huge effect on the players, and this isn't really what that's about. It's not the players experiencing the game. It's more as an audience. I should have said this earlier when looking. It's more about what, as an audience, are we getting from the episode that feels different? Why is this era new compared to the old Survivor era? So let's start just quickly with the rice thing. They don't get rice because it's only 26 days. That's supposed to make the game harder and tougher. And I'm sure that sucks as a player out there. I'm sure it really sucks to have no rice at all. But do we even care as an audience? Not really. Now, if the show were more about actual survival and battling the elements and hunger like it used to be, then sure. Maybe not having rice might give us something new. We might see the struggle, and we could compare that to the struggle of the survival in the 30s or something. But we never got that in the 30s. We know this. It's about the game. It's not about survival. It's not about actually facing the elements and the weather or whatever, about living on an island. It's really about all the twists, all the gameplay, all the strategy. That is Survivor's current focus. This isn't some new hot take, but because that's where we are in Survivor, the players not having food, not having rice, like, that doesn't come across on the screen to the viewers. At least it doesn't to me. Okay, so that's kind of the harder part of the 26 days, but we're also told that 26 days makes it faster, which literally is true. Tribal councils are happening more frequently. If you look, okay, tribal councils per days on average, it, you know, used to be one tribal council every 3 days. Now it's two. We get a ton of back-to-back tribals more so than ever. So from that standpoint, for the players out there, yes, they are going to tribal councils more frequently. That is faster. But for us as an audience, do we really feel the speed of the 26 days? Again, not really. I don't think the gameplay is all that much influenced by 26 days. For the most part, we still get one mini challenge and one tribal council per episode. I know when we merge, we split into, you know, two groups and do the whole two boot dance, but we've seen that in a bunch of seasons before, and that's just a matter of eliminating enough people to get down to a final three on the last day. So whether that's 39 or 26, we've seen that before already. So having a double boot halfway through the season is not really enough for me to say that I'm really thinking that 26 days has a huge impact on the episodes week to week, especially because I don't think Survivor was moving all that slowly in the 30s. Like, heading into the new era, would we even consider Survivor being slow paced at all? Like, remember Second Chance? All the old school people got back and they were like, oh my gosh, I am shocked how fast this game moves. We hit the beach, it was no shelter, it was like right away, we are, you know, the game's moving so quickly. And that was season 31. So that's 10 seasons before the new era. So it's been moving fast for a very long time. I don't think now that we have fewer days is the gameplay, the speed of the actual strategy and gameplay, I don't think that's really amped up at all. Again, you might not agree, at least for me, I'm not seeing where 26 is actually speeding up strategic gameplay. So really, what is 26 days influencing? I'm kind of on the side that it really isn't that big of a change to the final product of these episodes. But if I had to say if it was influencing anything, it's likely the relationships between the castaways. So it's really hard to say. And even though I do think this is true for the players out there, I don't think this is one of those things that's coming across heavily on our screens. I mean, we're merging at like day 12, but we still get 5 or 6 episodes to the merge. So we are still spending the same amount of time with the characters. Does that make sense? I mean, I get if you could say, you know, people are more flip-floppy because they aren't as true to their original tribes. Like, you could maybe say Jesse in 43, he doesn't pull that move on Cody if they had an extra week on their starting tribe on the beach. And that's a fine argument, but you would also probably say if it was a 39-day season, they're swapping tribes, and if there's a tribe swap, they're more than likely to be swapped apart, and potentially they spend even fewer days together. I mean, that we're into a whole hypothetical where we can't even predict if we get to that point in the season where Jesse makes that move, so it's kind of not worth going into. I think the question is probably, do we really feel like the relationships are thinner, or we're not fully seeing the picture? And I don't think that's the case. I mean, if you think these relationships don't feel as fleshed out or thin, that's fine, but, you know, go watch Game Changers. Go watch Ghost Island. Like, do you feel like you knew the relationships between everybody and where everyone stood in the game? I don't feel like through most of the 30s we had a pulse on who was, you know, with who, and, you know, which, you know, who are the tightest bonds. I mean, some of the bonds we would get out of nowhere, like the episode someone would go home, or where that relationship became important, be like, oh, these two people are working together, or they've had a good bond. Like, we haven't seen any of that as an audience. So I don't think this is a new era thing. If you are arguing that some of the relationships feel rushed or not fleshed out, I think that's just a kind of a modern Survivor thing, because we have so much to focus on elsewhere. So to wrap up 26 days, I just don't think I don't get that feeling those 45 minutes of screen time are all that different. Like I said, for the players, yes, I'm there. It's a big difference. But for us at home, we still get 45 minutes of Survivor. One person goes home. We see the relationships that are important to the story and the vote out that night. So, like I said, I'm going to be wrong on a lot of these. I'm going to head into this rewatch, and I'm going to look out. I'm going to pay attention to all these things. But for me right now, 26 days doesn't feel like a defining aspect where it really feels like, okay, the new era is the new era because it's 26 days. I think I'll get into some other aspects of the show that have more influence. And that brings us to the next big change, which I'm calling losing votes, or I guess you could call it losing of votes. So when players go on journeys and they risk their vote, or beware advantages, or I'm sure there's other ways, you know, we've seen votes get lost in a lot of different ways. In 45, we actually just saw it was at an immunity challenge where three people lost their votes for losing the immunity challenge post-merge. And also in 45, you can sacrifice a vote to extend idols. So we are losing lots of votes in the new era. I am mainly talking about 41 to 44 here as I go through this and for the rewatch. I'm not going to do 45 on the rewatch. One reason is because I'm already watching 45 closely. I already know I'm going to be podcasting more this season, so I'm just paying more attention. And then the other reason, obviously, it's 90 minutes, so it's hard to group it in when we're talking about storytelling and, you know, the relationships. Do we get to see them all? It's like, yeah, we get to see way more of them because it's 90 minutes. So it's kind of its own beast. So again, mainly talking about 41 to 44 here, unless some examples like this example right here, like sacrificing your vote to extend an idol. If that comes up, great. We'll talk about 45, but mostly 41 to 44 as we go through it. So losing votes. To me, this is a major change. It's a defining point of the new era of Survivor. It's a mechanic that feels distinctively different from the first 40 seasons. So I can think off the top of my head a few just really interesting tribal councils that you would not get if everyone voted. One of them is, I believe, 42. It was with Dan. He kind of flubbed it up, and I think Jenny goes home, and it was a 2-2, but there were five people on the tribe, and they were almost going to go to rocks, but then Jenny got the end of it. I mean, just a really weird tribal that you only get if people lose their votes. So another one is one that just happened was the Sabaya one in 45. Like I just said, I'm going to talk about 41 to 44. Right away, I bring up a 45 reference. That's fine, though. That was an amazing tribal council where Sabaya pretty much eliminates herself by not voting so that she could extend her idol. And the other players didn't even really know about it. So I do have fun with this. It does feel like Survivor is very different in the new era because of all the vote losing. It's just it's a tangible thing you can point at and say, this is making the episodes, the votes, the tribal councils, the strategy. It's making it all feel different and new. Whereas 26 days, it sounds like a big change, but I'm not getting that on my screen episode to episode. So there's not really much more to say on losing votes. I don't know what the counter argument would be. I can't imagine someone watching the new era and being like, yeah, losing votes, all the tribals feel like normal Survivor. It's like, no, I don't know. I will watch and maybe we'll see. I'll put a list together during the rewatch of, did this vote change because someone didn't have their vote? And we'll see actually how many tribals it ended up affecting. That'll be a fun thing to do as we go through on the rewatch. The next objective change is shot in the dark. And hasn't really done much, right? Doesn't really feel like it's influenced anything. I'm recording this about 3 weeks after Caleb played the first one to actually change the outcome of a vote. That was the first time it was successful. And then he actually gets eliminated one episode later. So even if you're pointing at that as like, yeah, it can work and have a big influence, he literally got voted out the next week. So if we're talking, 41 to 44 didn't really have an influence at all. And then 45, it had like a minor, it was a big moment. It was a lot of fun. But in terms of making the new era feel like the new era, gotta say no on that one. And I'm not even saying that it's not having influence on strategy or votes. It probably has come up in discussion when players are on the beach. Before tribal, they're talking about, okay, does that person have their shot in the dark? Who's more likely to play it? Like, I do think that's all happening. So there is influence, but the episodes we're seeing, I'm not feeling that shot in the dark is doing all that much. Trying to remember, have we even seen a tribal council or a pre-tribal vote plan where the audience at home is let in on, you know, the vote altering or a strategic plan was put together or enacted to counter the shot in the dark? I don't know if we've seen one. We'll pay close attention on the rewatch. My guess is no. I mean, I think I remember people being like, I'm playing my shot in the dark tonight just to try to get the vote off of them. And that's fun. But I can't really recall if any plans have actually been changed. So, and maybe there was like in an exit press, we found out and someone was like, yeah, I mean, this person seemed like they were going to play it. So we moved the vote over and that came out in an exit interview. But I mean, if you need exit press to have influence, if you really need to study and go into the game that much, then I'm not going to really label that as a defining aspect of the new era. So no, I don't think Shaun of the Dark is really a defining moment of the era. That doesn't mean I don't like it. I actually do like it. I think it's got some really fun strategic implications. And it's, again, this is only, we're only 4 or 5 seasons in to Shaun of the Dark. We've already gotten a really great moment with the Caleb one. That was really fun. So it's not that it hasn't done nothing. And I think in the future, there's still a lot that could happen with Shot in the Dark. So I actually was thinking, like, what could be a cool way to use it without playing it successfully? Because when I went on the recap podcast with Phil, Alexa was out that week. Phil was like, it will never get better than this. It negated 11 votes. And I kind of pushed back and said, I think just its existence in the game is enough to maybe make people do some creative things with it. I don't know. I thought of an example. Hopefully this makes sense, but let's say there's 7 people left, Alliance of 4 and Alliance of 3. One of the players in the Alliance of 4 has lost their vote by some means, I don't know. And the Alliance of 3 doesn't know this. So we're looking at a 3-3 tie. The Alliance of 4 no longer has their majority. What can they do? They can wield the power of Shot in the Dark. So one player in the 4-person alliance, whoever has the closest bond to someone in the 3-person alliance, whatever that closest relationship is, that person in the 4-person alliance goes up to their buddy, their closest ally that's in the minority alliance, and tells them, hey, you know, I've done everything I can. I can't push the votes off you. It's coming tonight. I don't want you to go home, but I can't go against my 4-person alliance. I can't flip. That would ruin my game. I wouldn't get any drink. Whatever. You know, you got to be convincing. You got to sell this. But they tell them, essentially, you got to play your Shot in the Dark. Then when we go to vote, if that person plays their Shot in the Dark, that minority alliance now is only playing 2 votes, and the 4-person alliance is only voting with 3, but they win it 3-2. So that's an example where, I mean, that'd be so cool to see. I don't know if we'll see it, but there's probably countless examples where you can use the Shot in the Dark in a creative way. So I don't know if we're going to see 11 votes get negated again. Probably not, but I still like it in the game. I'm not saying I think it's a defining moment or a defining aspect of New Era Survivor, but I do enjoy it when it comes up. We'll pay attention and see on the rewatch, you know, how much influence did it really have. I don't think it's that much, but still a fun game mechanic. All right, the last objective change I want to talk about is tribe structure. And this is pretty much just the structure of the tribes, that we are always starting with 3 tribes and we are swapping very minimally. We had that small one in 44. We just had our first full swap of the new era in 45. But for the most part, it's been 3 tribes and no swaps. So I do think this one is big, even though this doesn't sound like a new or groundbreaking thing. But 3 tribes is New Era Survivor. We've yet to see 2 tribes exist simultaneously. And obviously, it's not new to the show. We've seen it in All-Stars Season 8, and they brought it back in Philippines 25. And then Survivor pretty much fell in love with it. We saw 3 tribes. We didn't start with 3 tribes. We went to 3 tribes almost every season of the 30s. I'm not 100% on that, but we saw 3 tribes everywhere. So no, it's not its new thing, but it is to the new era. It's definitely a defining aspect. And we know why Survivor likes 3 tribes. There are 2 main reasons. One is that it makes the merge way more interesting because it's not these 2 parties vying for power and we know where everybody is. It's 3 parties and it's not that, there's not that clear line. So that's the first reason. The other reason is that it makes the pre-merge a lot more exciting because there is no place to hide. We keep hearing that. It's one of the things I know we get faster and harder and we get no place to hide. No place to hide, I actually agree with, because there's only 6 people on these tribes. There is no place to hide. It might sound corny, but I do agree with this one. If you're 1 person out of a tribe of 9 or 10, that's really not that bad. You could probably float your way through, find majority, but if it's a 6-person tribe and then people are losing votes or you are losing your vote, that's tough. So I think when we feel a lot of this faster, harder gameplay, it comes more from there being 3 tribes with very few people and that combination of losing votes. That's where we're getting this sporadic gameplay that we don't usually see, because, you know, your closest ally might not have a vote this week. You might be on a tribe of 4 people and only 3 people can vote. So we already went over some of those tribal councils from losing votes, but it does kind of combine with this 3 tribe structure that, you know, makes it scarier and maybe makes the game feel a little bit different. So that's pretty much it. That covers the major objective changes. Could maybe talk about all the new twists, like the Mergatory, that's kind of a defining thing, or Knowledge is Power. I mean, they've thrown in a bunch of different things. But I think those are just pieces of a broader subjective topic, and we'll get into the subjective topics next. The first subjective change that, you know, it's not as obvious to pinpoint and say this is what's definitely different, but to me, the casting feels really different. And I, you know, there's been some absolute gems for sure, but to me, the casting has not been great for the four seasons, the five seasons, however you want to call it, of the new era, mainly because they feel so homogenous. They feel like we're getting a different version of the same type of person. So I've liked a lot of the people. It's not to say that any of the individual people are duds or that they haven't made good TV or that they can't make good TV. It's just like the groups of them together. It feels like we are getting the same person. It's we are getting people in their 20s and 30s who are Survivor super fans, who it's their, been their lifelong dream to play Survivor. They play really hard. They play really strategically. They're there to win. And a lot of this stuff sounds like positives. But when you get that many people, it feels like that's about 80%. And then 20% are like your Carolyns, your Gablers, maybe Heather, that are just super fans who are also there because they love the show. So from a gameplay perspective, they're still trying to win and play hard, but they're just a little bit older and they, you know, don't fit with the 20 and 30 year olds. But that's what it really feels like to me. It doesn't feel like we're getting that many different types of people. We're just getting super fans. And I understand why they do this. There's so many twists and advantages, major focus on all the moving parts of the game and the monster. You know, that's what Jeff keeps calling the monster. They're throwing things at these players and they need players to understand the game and how it works. They need fans. They think that's going to make good TV. That's why they promote big moves, because when big moves happen, that's good TV. I understand why they're doing this. But do you think we're ever going to get someone like Keith Nail again, who's maybe not there just for the game? I mean, that was season 29, his first season. That's not that long ago. Like, could you imagine a player today at Tribal Council saying, stick to the plan? Could you imagine that? They say stick to the plan because they don't know that their ally is putting on a ruse to outplay their opponent. I cannot see that happening. All these players are so sharp and game-oriented that we're not going to have moments like that. And maybe that's okay in that we're going to get bigger strategic moves and bigger blindsides, but some of the levity and some of the fun and the wackiness comes from just absurd personalities that aren't necessarily big fans of the show. So I would really appreciate some different types of people. One thing I've noticed is that we get the word nerd or geek like all the time. It seems like a lot of people either self-identify or they refer to other players, like that player's kind of a geek, or I'm a geek, I'm a nerd, or I grew up with social anxiety, or I was an outcast, or whatever it is. It seems like a lot of players fall into this very specific archetype. And so I made a list of people that I think at some point on their season talked about either being a nerd or a geek or not fitting in or growing through anxiety, which is okay. And I'm not trying to like diminish any of these people. And as I said, none of these people are individually bad casting choices. It's that there's just a lot of the sameness here. So here's the names. JD, Evie, Zach, Swathi, Lydia, Hi, Omar, Marianne, Mariah, Gio, Dwight, Ryan, Sammy, Owen, Matt, Franny, Kane, Carson, Brandon, Sean, Jamiah, Brando, Drew, and Emily. And you could nitpick that list for sure. Like with Sammy, a nerd. On the show, he wasn't really a nerd, but I kind of remember a flashback about him not fitting in when he was younger. I don't know. I feel like we get that a lot. Maybe that wasn't Sammy. I don't know. There have been so many of these flashbacks about being, you know, an outcast or not fitting in or being a nerd or a geek that, I don't know, it's hard to differentiate everybody. And a lot of these seasons and casts, like, even when I was looking through the list of, like, who was on 43 versus 41 versus 42 versus 44, it's like, I was like, oh, that player's on that season? Like, I kind of forget because so many of the players are so similar. So it's just too much of the same person. How do we fix this? Should we go back to recruits and Mactors? Probably not. I don't think we're going to get a recruit like Earl who comes in and dominates the game without watching an episode of the show. I just think the games were too far away from the simplistic version of the show. We're too complicated for someone to just pick it up that quickly. But I do think we can find a middle ground. Do we need everyone to be a super fan? Why can't we just find a fan who maybe watched the show growing up, hasn't seen it a bit, still gets what an idol is or some of the main game mechanics? And, you know, you explain Shot in the Dark. Hey, this is a new thing we're doing. If you haven't watched in 5 years, this is what it is. It's not that complicated. People can get it. Maybe someone who found the show on Netflix or Hulu and they've seen 8 to 10 seasons of the more recent ones. You know, they don't know every vote. They're not a super fan. It's not been their dream for 15 years. It's been their dream for 1 year or 2 years. I don't know. Just different types of people. And maybe throw in just, I don't know, more age. I don't know. I think we need some more older people. Like, when's the last time someone in their 70s or 60s has played? Maybe it's been in the new era. And again, like I'm saying this whole time, these are just my thoughts looking back, watching the season once. Maybe there are a lot of differing people and I kind of just missed this. But to me, I get samey vibes with the cast. So there's been gems. There's been some really great characters. A lot of the people are awesome. It's that we're just really, really similar. So that's the first subjective one. Definitely a big influence on the new era. It feels like they're casting a very specific type of person. The next subjective one is the editing, which is really the post-producing, but we'll call it editing for simplicity. That's what everybody calls it. Like I said at the top of the show, I haven't watched as closely as I used to watch. So in terms of edgic and really paying attention to the editing of each character and the storylines that are running through, I don't know if I can really speak to it that much. I just haven't paid that close of attention to it. So from an edgic perspective, I don't have a lot to say. I mean, the winner's edits, you could argue, have been a little bit odd. They've been pretty good at disguising the winners. I mean, Erica comes out of nowhere in 41. Marianne had a fairly negative early on, if I remember, in 42. And then Gabler was, yeah, I mean, he definitely wasn't a person you looked at as someone who could even win the game and had definitely some negative. He was like putting leaves on people while they were sleeping, like some really odd things that you usually don't get from a winner. But at the same time, those are three really unique winners. So maybe it wasn't the editing and it was just like, these are three really unique winners and we're going to tell their story. And it seems like they were edited differently. Like Erica, she didn't go to tribal council until the merge and she got to break the glass thing. And so she wasn't even, you know, vulnerable until way deep in the season. So yeah, I guess it makes sense that she was pretty quiet most of the pre-merge. She didn't go to a tribal council. And then Marianne or Gabler, like those are really unique types of people who win the show. And they happen back to back. They happen, you know, we have a small sample size here. Those are pretty unique winners. So I just don't know if we can be like the editing is super different because the winners themselves are pretty different. And then we look at 44 with Jam Jam. He got more of a standards winner edit. So maybe that's an argument that, yeah, the editing wasn't that weird. It was the winners that were weird. I don't know. You could go either way on this. It's hard for me to look at Edgic and the winners edit and all that, like I said. But I don't know. I'm kind of like out on this one. I'm going to pay way more attention to the stories of the winners as we go through 41 to 44. Other things on editing. Flashbacks. You know, this, I could have talked about this in casting, but it does feel like it's part of the whole casting thing that everyone feels the same because everyone has these hardships in these flashbacks that we have to go back to. I wasn't really a fan of this. It doesn't really work for me where you're telling me this person has been through this previously. I haven't really got to see it. They're now on the island and I'm just supposed to care and be like, oh, that person's an underdog because of what's happened before. And maybe one or two of these a season can work, but it's when it's like, let's find the one thing that everyone's super vulnerable about, or that everyone, like, find that thing that's the worst part of their life so they can talk about it and then relate it to Survivor. Whereas maybe it doesn't relate to, like, there's definitely a chance. I'm just thinking, if I went to go play Survivor, like, worst thing happened to me and I go to the island, is that really going to be a big part of my experience? Now, I could be completely wrong. Maybe that stuff all just comes out. But to me, that's not how I want to have underdogs built up. And I think 45 has done a great job. They've really kind of waned off that. Emily is a great example. She comes in, she plays in a really, she kind of flounders out of the gate. She's really aggressive, rubbing people the wrong way. She's on the bottom of her tribe, but she works through her mistakes and she actually ends up, you know, now in a really good position. She outlasts all five of her tribe members. Big, everyone's rooting for Emily because she had such a tough go at it, but we got to see that. We don't need a flashback to it. So I think more of less flashbacks would be good, but that definitely is something we can look at the editing and say, yeah, that was new, that was different. I like the swing. I like when they try things. You know, I'm a fan when they, you know, rewind to something or they showed something from the future, maybe. I don't know. I'm into playing with the editing. I just didn't really like the flashbacks and the hardships. It didn't do it for me, and it felt kind of contrived when everyone has a flashback or a hardship like that, it makes each of the individual ones not feel as heavy. Not to demean anyone's hardships, but that's just, as a viewer, if everyone's got it, it doesn't feel as special. So I would say, like, just wrapping up editing quickly, I want to say that, yes, it is a big, impactful change, and it is different in the new era, but I can't really, other than the flashbacks, it's like a really definite objective thing, I can't really tell you why the editing's different. It feels different to me. Feels like, I don't know, a little more chaotic, or maybe it's a little more honest. It's hard for me to say. I think the new era is being edited differently. I just can't tell you why yet. So jury's kind of still out on that one. I will pay attention as we go through and definitely look at the editing more. So the last change we're going to talk about is gameplay. This is a subjective change because it's not like one thing, but it's just a broad, all-encompassing term of gameplay elements that they are throwing at the new era. So the twists, like knowledge is power, the hourglass, the earning the merge, the splitting up into groups all the time, the losing votes that we talked about earlier, all the gameplay stuff, because they are just throwing everything at the wall. It feels like every episode we have some big game event that's destined to happen, that's not necessarily a result of the players, but is a result of the game taking its toll on the players, and the players have to work through it. So to me, this is the absolute biggest change between New Era and Old Survivor. Not to say there weren't a lot of twists and stuff, especially late 30s and even most of the 30s. We had an abundance of twists, which is fine, but it does definitely feel distinctively different, the amount of kind of game events that we have. So let me introduce a spectrum. Okay, on one side of the spectrum, we have social experiment. And on the other side of the spectrum, we have game. And so I don't even know if those are exact opposites. Usually you would have kind of opposites of a spectrum, but roll with me here because I think this makes sense. So Survivor in the New Era to me is fully on the side of game. It is all the way game. We have lost a lot of the social experiment stuff. So think of season one. That's about as social experiment as you can get. And not to say that it wasn't a game. It was. Survivor will always be a game. There are rules. The castaways vote people out and we eventually arrive at a sole survivor, a winner of the game. So I'm not saying we didn't have game before. I'm just saying now we are full game. But think about season one. It was much more of an experiment. Like, let's just throw these people on an island. Let them live together. You got to vote each other out one at a time. We'll merge eventually, and then we'll get down to it. We'll vote, and we'll just see what happens. Like, let's just see what happens. Let's put these people in a ridiculous setting and just see what we get out of it. And then long after season one, I still think we held on to that premise. Like, even when we get to Idols, it's a game mechanic for sure, but it's also an experiment. It's a tool in the game. Let's put it in. Let's see what the players do with it. Wow. Someone just made a fake idol. Like, someone just did that on their own. That was not a game event that was planned. It was really cool. Vote splits. That's the way you combat the idol. That's not something that was always going to happen. That was part of the experiment that people had to come up with strategies on how to play around and navigate idols. What about a player playing two idols for two people at once and not even putting one on herself? No way, that can't happen. That's crazy. Those are the moments that were still experimental, because those aren't forced to happen. Those aren't destined to happen. They don't start the season in the grid with like this thing, we're gonna have someone play two idols. Those are really authentic moments. So I think now the twists are getting so far away from experiments and they're all the way towards game. Again, I'm not sure if those are even opposites, but that's what I'm saying here. So the most obvious example of this is the hourglass. That's not an experiment. Let's see what someone will do. I mean, it's like there was no decision at all. Of course you're gonna smash it. And that's what they wanted to happen. They wanted someone to smash an hourglass, and that's a big moment. But it's a produced moment that was going to be in the episode no matter what. When we split into two groups at the merge, and you have to earn the merge and all that, that's a game event. That's gonna be in the episode. That's a structural part of the game that we're now throwing into the overall format, which before was just, they live on an island, they vote each other off, everyone gets a vote, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the new era is a gauntlet of game events that are happening to the players. Where I think, as before, the players were making the game happen. They were coming up with the creative moves and ideas. And now, like, the creative new things we're seeing are being thrown at the players and it's happening to them. And, you know, you might be listening to this and say, hey, it's been crazy in the 30s. We've had all this stuff. And I do think there has been a lot of twists and probably too many twists in the 30s, but I still think it was more social experiment. It was like, let's throw extra votes. Let's do new types of idols, you know, safety without power. Or, I mean, there's a lot of random things thrown in, but it never felt like it was always planned. Hey, this event is going to happen in this episode. This is the moment we're getting here. We're baking this twist. So we're going to get one person doing this for sure, or that this will definitely happen. It just felt more like we're going to throw all these random tools and the players can use the tools how they see fit. Now, of course, there's going to be some examples of like, right, remember in Ghost Island where they sent everyone to Ghost Island and they were going to definitely do this? Yeah, but they still had to like risk their vote and play a game and decide if they wanted it. And I know most people did. And that was just kind of a mechanism to get idols into the game anyway. It wasn't like we're going to have, you know, these three people lose their votes if they lose the immunity challenge. So, which just happened in 45. And I'm not even saying that like one of these is worse than the other. I mean, I guess I am. I mean, I prefer the social experiment side, but it doesn't mean that these game events can't be really good. It's just that the social experiment moments, the ones where the players come up with the moves themselves, it just feels more authentic, thus making it way more enjoyable. Like when JT writes the letter to Russell, that's not a produced moment. That's part of the social experiment playing out. Like, hey, maybe I can contact the other tribe and give them an idol in order to help my game advance and in order to make myself win. Like, that's what JT thought. Like, that would increase his chances of winning. So it's something he decided to do. Whereas if this was going to happen in the new era, like the version of the way the new era works, it's like if we want to have some letter, like it would be a brand new advantage called the letter advantage. And it allows you to write a note to one player on the other tribe and they can write one back. And maybe you can pass an idol or I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound that absurd to have a letter advance just to get that letter moment into the game. And again, not all of these game events are necessarily bad. One of my favorite episodes in the history of the entire show was based on one of these pre-planned game events, and it was going to happen that episode no matter what. It was in season 40. One player on the edge of extinction gave a player still in the game the extortion advantage, and that player had to run around the island getting fire tokens from tribe mates in order to get their vote back. I mean, just listen to that again. I'll say it again, and just how, I mean, it sounds like it's insane that it's such a specific thing to happen. A player on the edge of extinction gave a player in the game an extortion advantage, and that player had to run around camp getting fire tokens from tribe mates in order to get their vote back. But that was an absolutely incredible sequence. It was probably one of the best sequences of the show's 45 season run. It made great television. So I'm not saying we have to get rid of all these really fun game event ideas. It just feels like every episode we're getting something just making the players do it when we're giving them very little freedom to have their own agency to act themselves. It really, especially 45, I'm trying to think, how many votes have we had where it's everyone has a vote and it's just straight down the line vote? It really hasn't been that many. So game events can be great. I just think we're going way too hard and putting them in like every episode to ensure that we get a big moment where the moment doesn't feel as big if it doesn't feel like it's authentic or happen naturally. It's like Kelly's blindside was probably the best moment of 45 because that blindside was done by the players. The best moment was not the mergatory or losing votes or any of the journeys or any of the things that have been baked into the game. The best part of 43, I think the best thing in the new era I've seen is the move that Jesse made, because Jesse used the tool of knowledge advantage in a really creative way in order to get an extra idol and did so many things on his own agency to make it happen. And that was not a pre-planned game moment that was going to be in the season. So that's it. Those are the big changes and whether I think, you know, they have influence or not. Just to quickly recap, 26 days. I really don't think it's that big of an influence on the final episodes that we're seeing. Losing votes, big influence. Shot in the dark, not a big deal at all. Tribe structure, totally a big influence. Casting, yes. Editing, yes, except I can't really put my finger on why. And then changing the gameplay all the way towards that game side of the spectrum, getting away from the social experiment. I think that's absolutely the biggest change that we're seeing in the new era.
I'm going to watch it, watch these four seasons, see if I'm right, see where I'm wrong. And yeah, we'll have fun. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a patron. Hope you join me as I rewatch The New Era.